Hey there.
Glad to have you along. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett, Empower Radio. It's thundering and storming and doing all sorts of that kind of activity here, but the show is going on, and we've got a good sign that on the other end, I'm talking to Janet Brooke. She's my interview guest today, Paths to Contact. Her story's in that book. If you had a chance to hear the interview with Jeff Becker, you might have heard bits and pieces of it. But we also have on the other end our producer who says it's sunny where he is in Michigan. And so we've got, you know, a different weather forecast from all parts of the planet. She's in Are you in Arizona, Janet?
Actually, I'm in Tulsa.
Tulsa. Okay. Oh, Midwest, just like me. Okay. Now, I wanted to talk with you specifically because of the stories that you talk about in the Paths to Contact book. And this is true stories from the Contact Underground. You can get it online. Just check out the Paths to Contact site. But with your story, it's something that you've experienced, that contact, from the time you were a child. It isn't something you've just gone out and started to say, hey, can I see these ships? Can I have interacted action? You've known about this. So could you share how that happened in your life and how it has expanded? And because I think that's a wonderful introduction for people who are saying, I've never experienced anything. I have a hard time believing it. Your story, I think, gives a whole lot, a bigger perspective on what it's like for somebody who's had an awareness since they were a kid that they weren't alone and that humans weren't the only action here on the planet.
I think, like I said in the book, I had started when I was 4 years old that I was really aware of that with the ghost in my grandfather's house. And my grandparents' house that said hello to me, and then I went home from there, and it was in the middle of August. I think I was just shortly before my fourth birthday, and I'm lying in the crib just taking an afternoon nap, and then I see this blue light kind of float down, you know, like almost like a fuzzy blue energy ball, and I'm watching it. It floats in. Lands at the foot of the crib and starts kind of edging toward me. And then for some reason, my mind said, Granddaddy Longlegs spider. And I suddenly got scared because I did not want this spider thing crawling up on my foot. So, of course, being 4 years old, I screamed. And it backed off immediately. And I heard this voice, this man's voice in my head, very, very gentle. Very grown up, it says, I'm sorry, we did not mean to startle you. And so we have this conversation back and forth a little bit, and he told me some things that later turned out to be true. And he was kind of, anytime I ran into a big rough patch in my life, this blue energy ball would appear in my mind's eye. It's kind of like a, hey, we're still here with you kind of thing, so... That went on all the way through grade school and into high school. And it just kind of went from there. But even all of this time, there was a piece of me that kept saying, okay, what really happened here? Was this my brother playing with a mirror and a flashlight? Or did this really happen? And why the voices in my head? And then you start hearing stories about people who hear voices being crazy and schizophrenic and so on. Okay, we're going to keep real quiet about this one. So it kind of went from there.
Well, and when you're talking that the time you were four and you had this conversation, it was a telepathic conversation, and you said the language was much more advanced than what might have taken place with a four-year-old or what we would expect a four-year-old would have in a conversation.
Right, right. It was like a very intelligent adult speaking back and forth, and not like people would talk baby talk to a four-year-old. So that in itself was very strange.
When you were a kid, that conversation at age four was much more advanced in terms of, you know, the things that you're speaking about than we would usually think about a four-year-old, you know.
Right, right. It was not somebody talking baby talk to a four-year-old, to a child. This was a very adult, very intelligent. Yes, hello, we only wanted to meet you. And the reason I think I connected with the spider was because while I had stayed with my grandparents that week before, My granddad had showed me a granddaddy long-leg spider and was talking about how beneficial this spider was and that it was a good spider and not a harmful one. So I think they used that image in my mind to kind of ease things off, and it kind of backfired.
Yeah, to give you a transition, but you hadn't been totally acclimated to the granddaddy long-leg spider thing enough to say, yeah, you can crawl on me.
Right.
Your grandpa was trying just to get you not to squish him.
Right, exactly.
They won't harm you. If you don't harm them, all's nice, you know, it's all right with the world. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, with that experience, so then you have these contacts and this encounter and this basically this other family that you are talking to. Did you share any of it with any relative at the time?
Well, at the time, a few days later, I did try to tell my mother and grandmother about what I called the blue fairies. Because I had made that connection that these were fairy folk. And my mom was really stressed out. She was having problems at work and with my dad, and things were not going well, so she really didn't have time to listen. Grandma thought I had a wonderful imagination and should write stories.
Okay, yeah. Okay, we've got the new creative person in the family. Here you go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it wasn't a poo-poo. It wasn't a, hey, kid, you know, be quiet. It was a, all right, well, let's channel this.
Yeah, yeah. How creative can we be? Yeah.
Okay, well, and part of this, too, is, though, that your story, this continues. It didn't just stop. It began to evolve. Now, do you think you said you got information that later came true. What was that?
Well, part of it was they told me that I was getting ready to start kindergarten, and they said there was going to be a very rough time of my life in school for a few years, but not to worry, that they'd be with me, and school was horrible.
What was the hard thing about school?
The teachers were, I had good teachers, and I had some really, really horrible teachers that were, you know, just, they thought, you know, if you made a mistake, the idea was to stand you up in front of the class and totally humiliate you in front of the class for making a mistake, that kind of thing.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's helpful. That makes you want to go to school.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay. All right, so they called that one. Was there anything else that they said?
They said that it would be very important to my future. And, of course, I kind of filed that away and didn't think about it. Now, when I was 9 years old and had my first official CE5 and didn't know that's what I was doing, I also talk about that in the book. When we were out, this was again in late August, early September, just before school started. I think it was 1966. Bunch of us kids are out on the street. We're looking up and watching this little, look like a red balloon or something, bouncing around and zipping and back and forth and hopping around. And only it was huge. And I remember thinking to it that I really wanted to, you know, if it really was an ET craft, I really wanted to go with them.
Yeah, for see what it's all about.
Well, I was ready to leave home.
Okay,
At 9 years old, I was definitely ready to leave home.
Yeah, and I'm sure the school thing didn't help. Sometimes it's this kind of thing that allows you this isolation and disassociation from your social community, gives you, in my opinion, in my experience, more freedom to experiment and explore and discover the things that people say don't exist. Because in that way, well, there's no connection with the things that other people say are more real, because they don't value you or give you any feeling that you're one of the gang, one of the community. And I think in that way, it's an advantage for people who are seeing things that other people haven't yet learned to connect to or haven't been in an environment where it's been exposed. So it may have been difficult. But in this way, you're developing these extraordinary connections and giving yourself a foundation to believe. And that's just the way I look at it. Does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense. You know, it's like that childlike sense of wonder in the world. And we lose that. We lose that so quickly.
Well, it's when you grow up, then there are other priorities that are all of a sudden, you know, put on your plate and everybody gives you this sentence of these are the things you're supposed to accomplish. These are the acceptable and approved goals, and they can be validated by external circumstances in the community or, you know, awards or symbols of recognition, that kind of stuff. And then all this other incredibly amazing spiritual connection is just kind of put on the back burner. And it's not just about a religion. It's about a sense of connection with the world in a greater way of being part of it rather than being a separate individual.
It is. It's an awareness of who you really are. And
now, you had a near-death experience.
Yes, that was in 1993. And it was just prior to my divorce, going final. I was on my way back to work from lunch, and a car T-boned my car. And it wasn't exactly with the tunnels and the lights and everything. It was just like all of a sudden, I thought I was at home and still in bed dreaming, wrapped in this warm, comfortable blanket that I did not want to get out of. And I'm floating around over the wreck site, looking at my car angled up on a hill, up on the against a pole, and thinking that's a really stupid place to park.
Yeah, the objective observer that you are.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, this is interesting, and there's, I'm aware of this presence over my right shoulder, behind me, and it's the same voice that I remembered from my childhood. The male figure that had been with me the whole time, and he's talking to me and telling me that I'm looking at these fire trucks over here that on to the right of me and to the left and all the ambulances and stuff. And I said, "Oh well, what's going on?" And he said, "Well, they're here for you." So I wanted to drift closer and see. He said, "No, wait here with me for just a little while." And then while we were waiting, it's like an instantaneous flash of your whole life, you know, literally from start to finish, all the little traumas and all the little successes and all the little things that, all the little steps that took me from that point to there came through. And I could see how at that point in my life, I was right at the point of finally taking control of my own life for my own self. So he gave me a choice. Do you want to come with us or do you want to go back? And I'm thinking, okay, I'm really just starting to get a handle on this life thing, and you know, I'm starting to get a handle on myself. Okay, boom. I never felt so much agony in my life. Instantaneous.
It's like, wait a minute.
everything was fractured, and all of the fractures were hurting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't give you the fine print.
Oh, no. And I look up to my left, and here's this police car with his face just ashen, looking in at me, and he said, "Oh, you're back," you know, kind of like, and the way the car was crumpled, I had a little head of two-door duster, I think it was, and the way it was crumpled, there was no way anyone could have gotten into the back seat to be with me on that right side. Because they actually had to pull that passenger door off to pull me out of there.
Did you have other memories of what happened during that time when you were overviewing?
No memory of the wreck itself. I mean, even when I got back into my body, I didn't even remember having been in the car.
Wow. Okay. So the part that when you're looking at it from outside and they said, "Wait a minute, don't go back," and you had the flashback. So basically what happened was you kind of grounded yourself to your body. So I think I can do this. I think I'm all right. I think I can go forward. So it was basically a checking your temperature to see if you were viable.
Yeah. Okay. You know, just kind of I really want to explore and see where this goes. Cause you know, I'm breaking out of an old relationship, just starting a new, more positive relationship. I'd like to see where this works out. And it pretty, I guess, worked out because things started falling into place. I started exploring past life regressions with a friend, with a very dear lady.
And then how did that help you connect more of your dots?
Well, what she did, what Ruth Davis did was we would go back to a past life that had a relationship to what was going on specifically in this life. There was some kind of karmic connection between the two. And that's the way she would always approach it.
So, okay, and you're saying, just so I can clarify, karmic, not comic.
Yeah, karmic,
a little bit
yes.
Of both, maybe. Yeah.
Well,
sometimes mine are comic.
A little bit comic.
Yeah, I was like, okay. Well, okay. And see, part of that I've experienced myself in terms of odds and ends, unfinished things that need to be addressed now. When you make that connection, whether it's through hypnosis, whether it's through a dream scenario, just when you finally put the lid on it, everything in your present day then shifts into a more cohesive or less chaotic state, because there's something there that is begging your attention. And until you give it something and get it out of the way, you're going to have to, go through a few hurdles, speed bumps and cartwheels and things like that.
And in some cases, brick walls.
Yeah. And car wrecks. And, you know, until something says, oh, I can fix this. I need to pay attention to this.
Yes. And I don't have to fix it all by myself. That's
key. Yeah. Yeah.
We're not
okay,
alone.
So
we don't.
When you're fixing it, not all by yourself. Now you're talking about others in human form, non-human form. How does that work?
Both, actually, because when I started surrendering to it and to the and learning to meditate, and you're just basically letting go and letting things start to happen moment to moment, all kinds of synchronicities started happening. People would come into my life, like Ruth, and somebody on the street would, you know, stop and say hi, and you start talking, and things would go from there. And I used to go out and sing karaoke, and I actually met Barbara Bartolik through a mutual friend at the karaoke bar.
Now, Barbara.
I don't know if you know Barbara Bartolik, who used to do the research, UFO researches.
No. That was going to say, explain background.
Well, she was pretty famous, actually. I don't remember exactly the deals because I didn't spend much time with her. I got kind of bad, weird vibes from her.
No, that's okay. We can do a Google search. That's all right. But I was just...
Yeah, you can do a Google search. She is in there. So.
Okay. And again, we're talking with Janet Brooke, her stories and paths to contact, true stories from the Contact Underground. There's a lot of different variety in here. People who've had lifelong contact, or, you know, they've been involved in military background and have had some access to records and also contact in that way. Most of the people in the book haven't been until this time organized or coordinated or, you know, really out there with their information. So this is really for you. This is one of the first times you're coming out and talking about this, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That part is scary, right?
Oh, yeah.
What made you more comfortable at this time? Was it finding a community who said, hey, you're one of us?
Partly it's just because it's time. It's time for people to start waking up and understanding that they do have access to all of this for themselves. It's not something that you go out and somebody tells you something and this is what it does.
Some of the thing I think that, you know, we keep in our Western society, keep thinking that when these things happen, it's the first time and we're inventing the wheel. When you go back in the indigenous cultures and hear their stories of the origin of some of their lineage, it has to do with star beings. And it isn't just a one thing or one part of the world. It's all across the planet. These different cultures who had no way of being in contact physically have the similar stories of these are our star brothers and sisters. They came here and someday they're going to come back. Have you found that as fascinating as you're making these connections with other people to find that there's a long history here that we just haven't had a chance to explore?
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of that chance to explore has been deliberately suppressed from us, too.
I agree. So, well, it's frightening when you don't know where it's leading and you can't control it. And basically, if you have to have anything here that deals with an economy or with any kind of organization or any kind of a ruling power, there has to be some way of controlling. And when that is taken out of the equation and you realize that you don't have the final say, it can be quite disconcerting.
Yeah, because there's a lot of stuff we absolutely have no control over.
Part of that, though, is that's the freedom, that you realize that it isn't just about us. There's a bigger player in all of this. And like said, when you were in the book, you talk about thinking about at one point about committing suicide, and you have a bottle of pills in your hand. And you say, all of a sudden, there's an awareness.
Oh, it wasn't. It was an actual person, an actual physical being in the room in that cell with me. And this was a woman. And she was there. I mean, like a ghost. If you look at her sideways, you can see her. But if you look at her, you wouldn't see her. But she told me that I had important things I needed to do. And that things would get better.
And some people call those avatars. I did another, I can't remember, Raja. One of the interviews I did with an Indian man who... describe something that this man, this other man who looked just as real as you and I, appeared in his hotel room and said, you're going to spend the rest of your life trying to find me. And then he just vanished, just like, whoa.
That happens. I mean, like I said, there's so many oddball things that happen that make so much fun out of life. I mean, people get so caught up in the everyday things and the traumas and the dramas of life, but there's so much more to life than that.
Part of this, I think, is we are still learning how this vehicle works. And there's a whole lot of stuff here in the hardwiring that is just basic equipment that we're finally learning that we can, you know, reformat the hard drive and do an upgrade and become more connected on a conscious level instead of just this physical thing. It doesn't have to be something that's a solid hard object. It can be something that is as subtle as the air and still very much alive and present.
Oh, absolutely.
What I want to get into in the next part, you talk about going out and meeting Stephen or connecting with Stephen Greer's group, and that movie is coming out now, Sirius, and there's a whole lot of expectation, at least not if there's a nationwide or official government type of acknowledgement, that there's at least more community awareness that these things are on the table and not fiction or science fiction. And so I wanted to get into that in the next half hour as we talk. And as long as our connection stays good here, we'll work with that. Again, there's some thunderstorms going on in the background today while we're doing this show. So if there's any, cutouts or voice distortions, that's what's happening on the other end. Anyway, when we come back, that's what I'd like. Are you okay with that? Is that,
Oh, you bet.
Okay, because there's so much that you have to share that I think, this is your life, you take it for granted, but for people who are looking in on this kind of engagement, this kind of relationship you have with others who are real but don't really factor into our everyday lives, it's fascinating, and it's a way of getting people more comfortable with their own realities and saying, you're not crazy, there is something else here, but you have to adapt, you have to develop, you have to evolve to be able to connect with it and engage it. And one of those ways of evolving is to get that very first lesson, the granddaddy long legs, don't hurt them, okay, and they won't hurt you. So, yeah, that's my humor. Okay. So, Janet Brooke is my guest today, Paths to Contact. This is the first time she's actually talked about some of this, in public. So, just be aware, this isn't something that a lot of these guys are out going, hey, you have to believe me. It's their story. You don't have to believe anything, but their stories are very powerful because they're real and they're happening now. And I think that's what's so wonderful about this time we're in. We can talk about it. The show is Conscious Living and Power Radio, the book Paths to Contact, True Stories from the Contact Underground. We'll be back in a few minutes with Janet Brooke, my guest today. Hang in there and remember, the world is full of opportunity. We're going to listen to some that maybe you'd like to explore. Stephen Greer in the movie Sirius, coming up.
My sport is football, but my passion is education. My name is Nnamdi Asamoah, and this is how I live United. I see too many kids miss out on moving up. Kids who could go on to college, but just need that extra little push. So every year, I take promising high school students on a college tour. We check out the dorms, the library, meet some professors, find out where the best late-night grub stops are. It shows them that there's a whole world beyond their own. But what's even better is that most of these kids decide college is for them. I'm Nnamdi Asamoah. I show kids that a higher education means a brighter future. So when it comes to living united, I don't just wear the shirt. I live it. Join me.
It takes all of us working together to make a difference. Find out how you can live united for education. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a boy wizard whose name was Larry Smarter.
Larry, why weren't you in Professor Dinky Doodle's mythical creature classification class?
Larry wanted to go to college, so he visited knowhowtogo.org to find which classes he really needed.
You missed the lesson on telling dragons from dragonflies.
Right. I want to go to college, so I'm taking Algebra 2, Biology, and a foreign language.
Foreign language? You mean so you can talk to unicorns?
Well, not exactly. Unless they're French.
But Larry had no time for unicorns, or even for Miss Petunia Tutti's time-traveling tutorial, which met every other yesterday at 25 o'clock.
Sorry I'm late. My snarkball game went into overtime.
And he knew knowhowtogo.org was way better than hoping for a snarkball scholarship. So, while his friends all aced invisibility, when Larry finally got to college, they were nowhere to be seen.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
License and registration.
But I'm walking.
Do you want to upset an officer of the law?
No, sir.
Good. I pulled you over today for littering.
I didn't litter.
Wow. That's what they all say. Unfortunately, I saw you drop a pair of thunder thighs a few blocks back. Probably happened as you were biting into that apple you're holding.
How'd you know they're my thunder thighs?
Well, my young friend, I'd like to say 2 years in the police academy helped figure it out, but between us, it was smallstep.gov.
Smallstep.gov?
Yep, Rooney. It's this site with tons of easy ways to lose weight. Some steps are so easy, people don't realize they're doing them. Like you taking small step number 83, snack on fruits. Go to smallstep.gov, you'll see. You can drive off now.
I'm still walking.
Take a small step to get healthy at smallstep.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is Conscious Living on Empower Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thanks for listening. I appreciate your time. Appreciate you tuning in. Today's topic, this is one I did before. I talked with Jeff Becker, who wrote the book, Paths to Contact. He actually got a bunch of people together and said, do you want to share your stories? Give me some insight. Give me some info. And we'll put a book together so we can let people know this is something that isn't just a one-time thing or one, you know, one part of the world, that this is something that's happening all over the place. So he got several people and edited everything all together. He put it all together, Paths to Contact, True Stories from the Contact Underground. And you can go on there. Website, pasttocontact.org, and find out more. And if you have your own story, share it as well. But you'll connect with others who've had these kinds of experiences, whether it's just recent or it's from birth. There's a whole world of activity happening here that's under the radar. It has been for a long time. One of the things that's coming about as a result is this movie called, it's a documentary with Dr. Stephen Greer. Serious. And there's a lot of expectations. Who knows what's going to happen? But at least it's getting people to talk about it. And Janet Brooke is one of the people who was interviewed for the book or who submitted her story. And I loved it because it talked about it, her contact from childhood and remembering it at age 4. And the ways that we are connected that we may not always really feel comfortable with our knowing, because it happens sometimes in a dream state or in a state nobody else is witness to. And yet we know it's real. And I just wanted to, before we get back into this, say I really like the quote that happens right before your story, my other family. There's a quote from Mahatma Gandhi, and it says, even if you are a minority of one, the truth is the truth. And I love that. I just think it speaks so much to our own individual, unique connection, engagement with what we call reality. And I appreciate you for taking the time and sharing your story. So what happened after, you know, after you said things started falling together and you began to piece, you know, people would come to you and show up at the right time. You had the past life regression or past life. You were connecting the dots. So how did things evolve from there to get you involved with the Stephen Greer and his group?
Well, this was in, I think, 97 when I got connected with Barbara Bartolik. And I didn't feel really comfortable because the first thing she did was stick a camera in my face, and that was not okay. I wasn't quite ready for that. But at the same time, all this was going on, my friend and I were looking, the friend that I was with at the time, were looking on CompuServe, on UFO websites and doing research on our own. And we came across the group that, the CSETI group that at that time Sherry Adamack was hosting. And so we started contacting with Debbie and people on that group and found out about Steve. And so we kind of, are you still there?
Yes. Yes.
Redial.
The contact.
Are we there?
Yeah, you're still here. You're fine.
Okay. Cell phones, I hate them. Anyway, how far do we get?
And we heard everything. Everything, nothing. Oh. It didn't disconnect. So, yeah, you can continue. So you connected with Sherry.
Okay. Well, actually, I never did physically connect with Sherry. We did most of the email with Debbie because at that time, Sherry was already ill. But we didn't know any of this. So we talked, we were talking about, okay, they had a thing going on coming up in June of the next year in Crestone, Colorado, which was drivable for us. We could make it there in about 12 hours. So we talked about, do we really want to do this? Do we really want to get involved with these people? Do we know anything about these people? Blah, 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 all that stuff.
I think that's, yeah, just to interject there. I think that's the feeling when anybody goes to a UFO conference of, do I really want to put myself out there? And I'm going to be put in this group. And what are people going to think of me? And, you kind of go,
Yeah, especially after my other experience with Barbara, bless her heart, she was just very enthusiastic, shall I put it that way.
Yeah, here's a camera in your face. Let's go, roll!
Uh-huh.
I've got one, yes. I think Dr. John Mack, who was doing the abduction inquiry, was a little more subtle with his, you know, trying getting people. And there's another one, Mary Rodman, who also is working on getting stories together. She's got hundreds of stories, and a lot of them, you know, involve the children and stuff like that. I'm going to interview her as well. You might want to make a connection with her. She's fascinating. These stories, I think, are so important. That's why I think it's important for you to share yours, because everybody has a different thing that may be just the one piece that ties everything together. You said that one that you called patience, the woman who appeared to you in a
yes.
physical manifestation, has been also documented or reported by other people. So it's a theme, and it isn't just you, and you have no contact with any of these other people, so you wouldn't have known about it. That's what I think is intriguing and also affirming.
Right, right. Because I actually called her Matilda, based on Matilda of Tuscany. I don't know why, but it was my love of history, I guess. But I started calling her patients just very recently after connecting with Monica, with a friend on Facebook, mm-hmm. who had very similar stories to tell about patients. And she described the woman and sounded almost identical to the woman that I had encountered.
Well, I think a common theme is when you read these encounters and when we have these experiences, we don't know how to, in some way, shape, or form, define it. Because it's totally out of our history and out of our realm of experience to go in and say, well, this is so-and-so from such-and-such. We're writing the maps here. We're blueprinting all of this with our engagements and our encounters for other people who are coming along. Yeah. And eventually there might be a common theme for the entire thing that we haven't even connected yet. But it's the beginnings of this, the beginning stages of beginning to say, all right, there's somebody in Australia who had this. Here's somebody in South America who had that. Here's somebody in Canada and America. And oh my gosh, they all have this same theme, this same connector that we can finally say, this is our experience, not mine, but our experience. And I believe that's where we are moving toward with all of this, with the connections people are making with like the CSETI groups and the Contact C5. What do you, you know, from your experience, do you think is going to be happening as a result of this movie? I mean, what's your expectation?
I don't know. I've been trying to wrap my mind around what do I really expect, and I don't know. I just I think it's going to be a bigger phenomenon than they could hope for, just because of the worldwide connections.
And have you encountered Dr. Greer?
Oh yes. As a matter of fact, I actually did some interviewing of some of the people for the movie. I don't know if they used any of the people I interviewed, but I did some transcribing.
Okay.
So I can tell you for an absolute certainty, having, and I'm probably not violating anything here, I did transcribe the transcript of the tape of the two doctors who examined, the two independent doctors who examined the little being.
Yes.
And my feeling is it's very genuine, just from listening to them.
And what was, okay, so we're a fly on the wall. Can you disclose any of that?
Not really, no. I promise not to disclose any, other than the fact that, yes, they were astounded by the results.
Okay, good. Well, that's, I mean, the
and
fact
also,
that
I can say something from my own personal, when I actually saw the first picture of the little being that somebody had posted on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And, or I watched, actually, what it was from the trailer, from the Sirius trailer. And when I saw how small it really was, it reminded me of something that had happened to me when I was a teenager, another one of those lucid dreams.
Yeah.
Where these little creatures, I called the matchstick men, because that's about how tall they were. They were, you know, 6 to 18 inches tall, and very slender, and they had this little craft that actually looked almost like a toy flying saucer that landed in the front yard of a neighbor's yard. And, of course, we were all out. This is actually a dream. I didn't actually physically happen. But mm-hmm. they came running to me for help because something, the helicopters were coming up from the International Airport, from the Air National Guard, and they were trying to track down this little craft, and they came to me for help. And I woke up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I had forgotten all about that dream until I saw that picture.
Until it triggered. Yeah, somebody else said that there was, I think John Kelly had done an interview with somebody who said, oh, these are just like juvenile spider monkeys. And then somebody else was kind enough to go on and do a wiki search and said, okay, this is the skeleton of a juvenile spider monkey. Could you please quit it?
I can actually say one thing, that they determined it was, that they, and this is also in the Sirius document, in the trailer, so I'm not violating anything. But yes, they did confirm that it was not a fetus.
Well, until this is all out, then there's a lot of speculation all across the board. But for people who've had these experiences, they know it's real. The movie won't prove anything. I think the greater picture here is that it gives people the freedom to actually say, I've had this as well. I know what you're talking about. And it gets to that level of where it's more of a community thing, where the community finally says, look, guys, I don't care what's going on at the top. This is real. And you guys can stick your heads in the sand right. as long as you want, but we are having an experience and we're going to talk about it. You can go play cards.
or watch Jay Leno.
Well,
watch reruns, yeah.
But I don't expect some big official revelation. I do anticipate that more people will be comfortable about telling their stories. And there will also, as a result, be a lot of, again, disinformation and people who are trying to get attention rather than trying to add any kind of, I guess, integrity.
Yeah.
Because it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity. There's a lot of people who are vulnerable, a lot of stuff going on there that you can't tell fact from fiction, and you just have to walk through it and see what resonates and go with your own best judgment and your own encounters and say, well, this is what I know is real, so I will gravitate and follow those and connect with others that I feel have that same sense of authenticity that that I have with my own stuff. And it really will, it won't lead you wrong, in my experience.
No, it absolutely won't, because it's hardwired into us. Our instincts, our own personal instincts are hardwired into us. And we just have to learn to trust it again.
And I think that's the learning curve right now. That's the learning curve. What's been the hardest part talking about this for you, you know, in that mean being shy and a little bit hesitant to share when this is such a hot button issue?
Well, I will say it's gotten a lot easier in the past few years, but mainly just having people look at you like you're crazy, and mostly they just shut you off. I mean, I start talking and they will change, will make a point of changing the subject.
That's UFO
or they'll
lady.
They'll cut you off.
Yeah.
They won't let you talk. Yeah.
Well, they don't, you know, part of it is if you don't have anything to add to the conversation, it's not a conversation, it's a monologue.
Exactly.
I'm guilty of that sometimes. Sorry.
Oh, well, we all are.
You know, it was like, ooh. But the thing is, when you're so excited, when these things have happened and your reality all of a sudden becomes multidimensional, you are like, oh my, wow. You want to talk it. You want to share it. You want to just say, guys, we haven't even tapped the tip of this. There is so much more. And whether it happens in our lifetime, who knows? But being here now is absolutely incredible. We just have to get off the mark and start going out there and saying, what else is here that we have been discounting and disillusioning ourselves that it isn't here because other people right beside us aren't saying, oh, yeah, I see it too. Sometimes they're not going to see it. And you have to shout loud enough to get to see it.
If you say something that you're seeing, that's what we do out in the field, you know, when we start sharing. Mm-hmm. Because somebody who might be, oh, did I really see that? Did that really happen? And somebody else says it. And you go, oh, my God, yes, I saw that too. Or, yes, I felt that. I heard that. And it becomes alive. It becomes real.
Some of this is collective dreaming. And it's a way of coordinating our ideas, our beliefs, our values, our energy to manifest things that we would like to give birth to in our reality, in our physical environment. And I'm not saying this because this is some documentation somewhere. This is because it's my experience. Because the more I've had people validate and affirm and give me some kind of frame of reference, the clearer and more concrete my own experience has been. But when it first comes in, it's fuzzy. It's like trying to tune a station and you get static either direction. You finally have to say, I see this. And then it becomes clearer and clearer. It isn't a moment. It's a lifetime. Does that make sense?
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's our heritage. It's the heritage of every human being on this planet.
There's a guy, his name is Kip, and he wrote a book called, and it's Hartzell, and the book is out under Hartzell today, because that's the co-author on it. But he said when he met his, he met his dad on his deathbed. He had to sit with him as he was dying and leaving. And when he finally realized that this story his father was telling him, you know, during his exit scene was beyond anything that we have ever put in our time frame, other than through fiction or science fiction, it's Atlantis. And it talks about his father being on a ship connected with the Atlanteans and being here and having to leave and the whole nine yards. But this father, as he was going through his exit phase, would come in and come out in and out of clarity and never missed a beat with a story. He said, I have to tell you this. You're going to write it. He's going, I'm not a writer. wait a second. Hey, but the story is fabulous. And he's got three.
You're not trillion. Yet, but you will be.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing. He left his son something to do. And his dad has an amazing story in itself. But these are our stories. And they come to us in different ways. Hank Wesselman, who is an archaeologist. He happened to get into this Stargazer trilogy that talks about some of the stuff that the kahuna in Hawaii knew about. And he said he was intimidated at first because when he was of, you know, telling his story, one of the big kahuna showed up, and he's like, and he's telling his story, and afterwards he comes up and affirms, mm-hmm, you're legit. Yes, you have these experiences, and we see eye to eye. And when the kahuna has no longer, he passed on, but he gave him the stick, the legacy of telling the story, being that these are the ways that our society and our people now can carry this forward. But it's a little foreign to us because this way of being has been in some ways eradicated from our social history in Western culture.
Oh, yes, very much so. And what this is our version of the talking stick, which is what that stick the kahuna gave him.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and that's important. But it gives us a broader picture that reality happens just as vividly and authentically on the dream plane as it does in this waking plane. And some would argue this is the dream plane and the other is the waking plane. No matter how you look at it, it's happening 24/7. And being able to integrate that, let me bring this into a smaller picture. I had a dream. I usually dream about people before I do the interview if there's another connect. So this morning, I'm going back over, and one of the dreams I had that was very vivid, I met in the backyard somewhere. I was out in the yard and seeing these fairies, beautiful little fairies flying around. I'm thinking, oh man. And I want to back the car out. So one of the fairies moves back to show me how, you know, the safe path to take the car. And in the meantime, I'm supposed to go meet with these little kids. And the little kids are in this round area that's a, you know, cleared out area of crops, a grassy area. Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. You can put the two together. And they're wanting to talk to me, and I'm thinking these most intelligent 2-year-olds I've ever met, because they're all little small people, but they look like our children, and they're talking to me and giving me information. And I wish I had written it down quicker, but I knew the gist of it, and I knew that was about today's program. And so when you first talked about fairies, because I sent you that little email and said, hey, I this was my dream. And then, you know, you're bringing this up and saying that was what you had as a kid. I didn't know that. But the dream was a way of integrating my connection with you as being part of a bigger picture that I don't have to know about. I just know I'm connecting the dots and things are happening as they're supposed to be. That's how our reality works for me.
Well, that is how our reality works. And that's what I call the synchronicities that happen. And when you let them happen and don't try to fight with them and try to force it, it's amazing the things that can fall into place.
At this point in your life, what's the most profound experience you've had of the ET variety?
Oh, gosh, where would I even begin? I think it would have to be the day when I found out I had the aneurysm and they appeared to me that night. That was incredibly profound and so touching and so personal, because it was very reassuring, and it was something that happened that I thought was only a few minutes on the clock, and 4 hours had passed.
Okay, can you do details? With the aneurysm, what was involved?
Well, I had gone for a cholesterol screening, and it showed up on the cholesterol screening, so I went through and followed up on that, and they found it in the thorax region, which is about the safest place you can ever have an aneurysm if you got to have a bubble in your bicycle tire.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of bummed me out a little bit. So the next afternoon, I had gone up to the swimming pool at the other apartment complex we were living in, with one of our neighbors, and she and I were out paddling around and toward evening, and I looked up, and there was this heart formed in the clouds. It was like a Valentine heart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As you're saying this, I'm having a heart on my screen from Skype.
Enjoy. Oh, really?
It says, enjoy more ways to keep in touch. It's the little blurb, the ad that's playing right now. It was, as you were talking, this heart was taking shape on my screen. See, this is a stuff that speaks to us in ways that in Western society, we have been taught not to pay attention to. But when you go back into this divine, spiritual, non-corporeal way of engaging your environment and nature, you realize it's speaking to you the entire time. You just have to learn the code.
Well, Well, you have to learn to shut up and listen. That's the biggest part. That's where meditation comes in, because I always used to say, and I've heard this from other people too, that prayer is asking for something or talking, and meditation is listening for the answer.
Yeah. Well, if you really get to the beyond the prayer, it's a way of being, because you're in constant contact with that higher consciousness. And so if your life becomes a prayer, and we're human, we're going to make, you know, our prayers are going to have some kinks.
But oh, yeah.
And it's all a part of the process, and you have to work out the kinks to smooth things out, or it doesn't progress. It doesn't become stronger, sturdier, healthier, more integrated. It's it's one of those things. We're a work in progress, and that's beautiful too. So they gave you the heart. And so were you afraid that all of a sudden it might be over, that the ride was done when you got that?
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. You know, that kind of passes through your mind. Says, oh, well, it was, I figured from since 1993, it was pretty much on borrowed time anyway. But,
No. This is just getting good. You got the front row seat now. You can't check out. Get
oh, definitely. But
I think they were trying to get your attention.
It's been good, but I've just really, and it, just one of those little quiet moments, you know, even with the Valentine heart in the clouds and the cloud-shaped craft that showed up with Bob and me that later that same evening, the heart formed into an arrow pointing straight to this lenticular cloud that was very strange looking and going against the prevailing winds. And even with all of that, there's this moment of, did it really all happen? Did I really experience all of this?
See, that is what I think. This questioning. We are so full of questions. I have people who have talked to me and shared their intimate experiences that are profound and don't jibe with our reality. They see something here that appears to them and lets them know there's more than meets the eye. And they go, well, I must have made it up. It must have been the coffee. It must have been something. And
it was my survival kit, my creative survival kit.
Yeah. We're such doubting Thomases.
But I mean,
so that's, that's why you're
the
sharing.
Answer, but I said, I knew the answer, and even when I was questioning it, but it was like, I said, I was kind of mentally preparing myself. Well, if it's time to go with you, I'm ready to go, you know, whatever, you know. But this sparkling kind of column of light showed up right at the bedroom window. And when I walked to it, I could actually put my hand and feel the warmth, because it was in the middle of the winter, middle of fall or winter, and I could feel the warmth tingling from it, and I could kind of sense that it was a sentinel energy. It was about 8 or 9 feet tall, and I just felt so connected and so blessed, if you will. This tear started coming down, so I went on back and laid back down. I could feel somebody take hold of my hand. Mm-hmm. And it felt like for just a few minutes they held my hand and said something that was very, very strange. That's what it said, wait for your home, child. Exactly that way.
And you know, there's a reason we have to check out right now. I think that's the message. That's where we're at right now. In our whole, in the bigger picture, the macro, the micro. Janet, thank you. I've got to let you go. It's the end of the program. But
The hour is fast.
I know. Paths to Contact, if you're listening, check out pathstocontact.org. Janet Brooke, her story is in there. You can connect with her through Facebook or through some of the other groups, the communities that are developing. Anyway, thank you for listening. I appreciate your time. Remember, we haven't begun to reach our potential. We're just learning it. But it's there. See ya.